by welcoming and giving comfort to the families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement. Hi, I'm your host, Clem. Welcome to the Arizona Area Sponsorship Workshop. This workshop is hosted by the Arizona area of Al-Anon. Our intention is to make sponsorship more accessible and less mysterious to all Al-Anon members. Any sharings are solely the opinion of the member and not that of the Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. We'll open with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Suggested Al-Anon preamble to the 12 steps. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to the families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. I've asked Melody to read a portion of the bookmark, Sponsorship, Working Together to Recover, M-78.
Hi, I'm Melody. Sponsorship is a relationship built on equality, anonymity, and trust, an opportunity for growth for both the sponsee and the sponsor, a benefit at any stage of recovery, a commitment to practice healthy communication not based on intimidation or demands, an agreement to recover and grow together, not to struggle in isolation, an opportunity for self-discovery, not a teacher-pupil relationship, an experience based on unconditional love, not shame or judgment, a spiritual relationship with no strings attached, a one-to-one relationship, not an exclusive club, a bond focused on Al-Anon's four primary ideas. We are powerless over the problem of alcoholism. We can turn our lives over to a power greater than ourselves. We need to change both our attitude and our actions. We keep Al-Anon's gifts by sharing them with others.
Thank you, Melody. We will be exploring segment four, panel shares and discussion on steps 1, 2, and 3, techniques for working these steps, literature used. We will now hear from our speakers. They are Debbie, Claudia, Rick, Beth, Melody, and Kim.
Hi, I'm Debbie, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I wasn't sure exactly how to do this, so I thought I would just share a little bit about my experience with the different sponsors I've had and also my dealings with sponsees. I've had four different sponsors in three different states, and usually the relationship ended because I was moving away. Oops, sorry, I'm not supposed to be using my hands. And so the first sponsor I had, I don't think that she had much experience in the program, but her words to me were that she would help me as far along in the program as she was. And I didn't know any difference, so I thought, okay, that's fine. And we were living in a state that we didn't like, each of us didn't like it, so that was a common bond we had. That's why I picked her. And so we would get together, and it wasn't that we worked through the steps, but she would share principles on if I was sharing a problem I was having, she would share what had helped her. So it wasn't really that with that sponsor that I worked through the steps, you know, 1, 2, 3, and so forth. I'm going to sit on my hands. My second sponsor I got when I moved to a different state, and that relationship was more, she was very involved in service work. She was the GR, and then she went on to be the DR. And so we worked a little bit on the steps, but mostly she taught me a lot about service, how important it was. And as I worked through the steps, she would share how that was important in service also. So I felt like each of those sponsors gave me something that, I think, oh, this one should have done that and that one should have done that. But that's not the case. Each time that I worked with a sponsor, I needed that sponsor for that particular time and place. My third sponsor, when I moved to Arizona, I got a sponsor, and we started diligently working through the steps, and I got to step 7, and she sent me a text saying that she would no longer be my sponsor. She didn't tell me why, and I didn't really ask. I was a little bit heartbroken, but I worked through that by just clinging to my higher power and to understand that like we just read in that bookmark, it's not a lifelong commitment. And what I learned about from that for myself was that I had kind of placed that sponsor on a little bit of a pedestal. And so when her feet of clay showed up, I was the one who was devastated. And then I have a current sponsor who I have been working through the steps and traditions, and we're just now starting the concepts. And I think that each one of those, when I got to Arizona, that sponsor said, well, we have to start all over at step 1. I said, okay. I was in a place where it's like, okay, I didn't feel like I had really gone through the steps at all, in a very consistent way. So I said, okay. And so we got to step 7. And then when that relationship ended and I found a new sponsor, that sponsor said, okay, we're going to start over at step 1. I was like really mad. I was like, I've already been through 1 through 7. Come on, can't we just go on? I want to at least get through these steps in my lifetime. And so I kind of didn't want to do that, but I wanted to work with this person. So I did it. And it was amazing how much I had learned, again by going through them over again. And I would even say to her, I know I didn't want to start these over, but I'm really glad I did, because each time I was in a different spot. And so each time with going over step 1, I could see more of my powerlessness, and I could see more of how that powerlessness was making my, not being willing to admit it was making my life more unmanageable. And so, then as I worked through the step 2, I had worked a long time on developing my relationship with my higher power. And it kind of ebbs and flows. I know I have a higher power. I don't always want to utilize a higher power. So I have to be constantly reminded that that's an important part of being able to work the rest of the steps, like 1, 2, and 3. And 3 has been the hardest, and I have to constantly remind myself that every day I need to turn my will and my life over to that higher power. So a little bit of how I work the steps. What I do is I start out, I wrote down how I do it. I'm very systematic. I start out by using P17, which is the 12 steps and the 12 tradition pamphlet, and I read whatever step I'm working on or tradition. Then I read P60, which is Al-Anon's 12 traditions illustrated, and I have a very simple mind, so I need to have it kind of illustrated for me. I'm a very visual person also. And after I read those, and I'm taking notes, pointing out things that maybe I hadn't thought of before. And then I read how Al-Anon works on the step. Then I read Al-Anon's 12 and 12 BA. And I find that is like basic English for me. It's like the simplified version of Path to Recovery. Sometimes Path to Recovery gets a little heavy, as you're trying to trudge through a step. But I find that Al-Anon 12 and 12 is extremely helpful to put it in simple layman's language. Then I then go on to Reaching for Personal Freedom, P92, and I just read the little stories and I don't answer any of the questions. And lastly, I read Paths to Recovery. And after I've read all that and taken notes and kind of looked over and thought about what I had learned from each of those readings, then I answer the questions from the workbook on Paths to Recovery, and I work through them systematically. That's kind of how I work my own step work. My sponsees, I have five of them now, but they're not all working at the same pace. And so at first I was kind of one of those people that was like, here's how I do it. You should do it kind of along the same lines as I do. And I came to realize that each one of those gals that I'm working with is different, and they're in a different spot. And you know, just like I didn't get it all the first time I worked through some of those steps, I can't expect them to. And they're all individuals. One is just trudging right through the steps. Of course, she's in another 12-step program, so she's familiar with kind of the system of, you know, how you work the steps. And she's very diligent in doing a lot of reading and then answering the questions. And then others, they show up, they have their book, and it has nothing in it. And I want to say, shouldn't you have kind of written some things up? No, I thought about them. So it's just interesting, and I feel like each one of them is at their own place. And so I respect that. I listen. I try and help them. And, you know, if they're talking about a situation, then I try and help them apply some of the steps they've already worked on. So that's basically how it is for me. And I know I have more time, but I think that's all I'm going to say for now. So thanks for letting me share.
And our next speaker will be Claudia. Claudia, are you ready to unmute yourself?
You betcha. Hi, everybody. I'm Claudia. I am really glad to be here. I am grateful to all of you who keep coming back. My first step, second step, and third step was a little different than a lot of people's. I had three sponsors in the first 6 months through no fault of my own. But the first two said that I didn't need to do a step one, a step two, or a step three because I had walked into a meeting. And that really helped me understand the importance of step one, two, and three, because I tried to write a step four and share a step five with people that I didn't even know. I hadn't sat with them much. They hadn't learned much about me. I hadn't learned much about them. Steps one, two, and three are tremendous for me because if I am in a pickle, if I think it's your fault, I have a great tool. I can just go through step one, two, and three. What am I powerless over here? Could God maybe help? I don't know, maybe. And maybe I should let my higher power do my higher power's job, and I should just do mine. In all of the step work that I do with the sponsee, I ask them to do the same things always. It's their choice. But I ask that they define the words of the steps because I think it's just helpful if we're understanding what the step is talking about, and sometimes even what they may have meant when the step was written. I ask them to read all of the literature on this step, including the pamphlets, and to write brief reflections if something comes up for them. I ask them to call three people to find out what their experiences were for each step, just because I found out after I finished a step that I knew what my sponsor knew, and maybe I knew something that was mentioned in a meeting, and that's about it. But when I started getting used to picking up the phone and talking to each other and reasoning things out, I wanted my sponsees to share that too. And I'm coming to believe maybe that I might not have all the answers, and maybe those three people do. I ask them when they're finished with the step to write on their experience with each step, and I think it helps them to pull everything together. They get bonus points if they're willing to submit it to the forum. That's what I ask them to do on each step. All the rest of the stuff, really, I kind of make up because I ask my higher power for help when I meet with a sponsee. And sometimes I'll just hear things that I guess I wouldn't have heard without asking for help. Sometimes a sponsee will say something and inwardly I'll gasp because I have no idea how to respond. And I'll say a quick prayer and I'll open my mouth and as I'm speaking, I'll be thinking, wow, that's good. In step one, it reminds me of the pigeon story, Courage to Change. Totally, totally powerless over the pigeons. But recently, actually, step one has not been about being powerless. It's been about finding my own power. I used to share in a step meeting, a first step meeting, and I'd say, the steps are all powerful. I love 11 of the steps. This is not one of them. I hated being reminded that I could not change things outside myself. But after doing the first step a couple hundred times, it just started to make sense to me that if I could sit down, if I could lay down everybody else and all their problems and everybody else's business, suddenly I had all this time, I had all this energy, I had all these resources to make my life look like I wanted my life to be. The other thing I learned in step one is that I have got to ask my higher power to help. I really believe that if I don't ask him for help, he goes golfing or something. I don't think he worries about me. Before I start the steps, I remember that there's a spiritual principle behind each step, or maybe five. But I heard somebody say once that there are three spiritual principles without which the 12 steps, they can't be worked without these three spiritual principles. The first one is humility, the second is humility, and the third is humility. Humility is not my favorite thing. It's just not my favorite thing. I would rather be God. But when I remember that I'm powerless in step one, it does give me a sense that maybe my higher power knows better. A friend of mine says that in the first step, we learn what the problem is, that we don't have the power that we want to change that or him or this. But in the second step, I learn what the solution is, and that solution gives me access to power. And step one and step two taken together remind me, yeah, I'm powerless, at least over other stuff, but with the help of my higher power, I'm bulletproof. There's a wonderful story in Courage to Change about a gardener who takes a vacant lot and turns it into a beautiful garden, and he works hard and waters and weeds. And the neighbor comes by and comments on the beautiful job that God has done. And the gardener looks at him and says, yeah, you should have seen this place when only God had it. And it reminds me that in steps one, two, and three, and all the steps, yes, my higher power does the heavy lifting in a lot of places. But if I'm sitting on my recliner eating bonbons, things are not going to get done. I thought that knowledge was really important, and it's hard for me to work with sponsees who sound like me or sound like I used to sound. I've heard that, if you spot it, you got it, and if it makes you mad, you got it bad. But in step one, I get to watch my sponsees come to a place where they let go. A friend of mine today told me that the hardest yoga position is, I don't do yoga, but it's the one where you lay on the ground and don't move. And I get that. And if I do a strong step one, if I really look at what's going on in my life and the power that I have over it, it makes it easier to surrender. I do things, I'm not going to characterize myself, but I have a lot of questions floating around in my head about step one, and I like to pull out whatever fits for any particular sponsee. I ask them in step one, what kind of things have brought you to your knees? Because they've all felt that feeling of powerlessness, but they didn't connect, for me, the time my kid died to the step one. In step two, I come to that solution. And for me, step two is all about evidence. When I came into Al-Anon, I had a higher power. I knew what he looked like. I knew what he did. I knew how much he weighed. I knew all this because somebody had given me all this information and told me all this stuff about my higher power. And then I found out that the experiences that I had of a higher power did not match the knowledge that other people had given me. Step two is my favorite step to work with the sponsee. And 3 days after my son passed, somebody asked me to sponsor her. I still tell her she's a heartless something or other, but sponsoring that person new to Al-Anon saved my life in the first step, in the second step, in the third step. It was very real for me. And for an hour and a half a week, at least, it was not about me and my problems. It was about her and her higher power and the power of her higher power. And it saved my butt. For me, step two is about paying attention. Paying attention reminds me what my higher power is doing for me today. And memory reminds me what my higher power has done for me in the past. Another thing I ask people to do in step two is to keep a blessing book. It's a record of things that have happened in their lives where it seems like it just might be God. If it's odd, it's God. One time I was working in accounting and I lost my job, got laid off. And usually I got a job in like 3 days, and this time it was 3 months, and I panicked. I made a deal with my higher power. This month, if you pay the bills, I'll pay the mortgage. And then I reversed it, and it worked really well. And I remember coming home from a meeting Friday night, and I cried all the way home. I didn't have the money for the bills. And I didn't have the money for the mortgage. I pulled into the driveway. I said, you're going to have to do it all. And I felt so much shame. And I got out of my car. I went to the mailbox. And I pulled out a check for $1,700 that had pretty much fallen from the sky. I didn't cash that check for a week because I needed to bring it to my Friday night meeting and pass it around. Step two is about swapping stories about how God shows up for us. I also ask my sponsees to write a letter to God and then to write a letter back. And every time God shows up in those letters. One time I was supposed to speak and it was a big crowd. It was bigger than I was used to and I didn't know what I was going to say and I was freaking out. 20 minutes before I spoke, I wrote, Dear God, please give me the words tonight. And then I wrote and got answered, and I saw, hi, Claudia, I really hadn't thought about it. I thought you had it all handled. And my higher power shows up with a personality and a character, and I get to know that higher power and know when he shows up. in step three, it's about I finally take some action. And I couldn't turn my will and my life over. But there's a line in some of the literature that says a member tried to turn over her mourning and pay attention to what happened. And that was really powerful for me. So with my sponsees, I ask them not to turn their will and their life over today. I ask them to turn over that red light or that electric bill, or, you know, start as small as you can, the shoes you want. I don't care. But start turning things over and keeping track. And a lot of times I'll ask sponsees to keep records. I know that what I pay attention to improves. I have them write about who they have trusted in their life. Another tool for me in step three is to empty out my guide box. I go, when I feel totally hopeless and I know nothing can go well, I empty out my guide box on my desk and I go through them one by one. And one by one, I want each time my higher power proves that he had an idea when I didn't have an idea. I ask them what being, my sponsees, what being cared for means. A lot of my sponsees have no memory of being cared for. But when we talk about it, it seems like there's a grandparent a lot of times, there's somebody, and then they can make that connection with being cared for by God. Step one, two, and three. It's not everything, but it's a good start. That's all I've got. Thanks for listening.
And now, it's Rick's turn. Rick, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Okay, can everybody hear me? Yes, okay, good. So let me just start off. Let me start my clock. Okay. So a few things. I always meet face to face with sponsees. We meet for an hour a week, typically. Mostly, I sponsor men. The very first 5 minutes of the meeting, if they have any drama or things that they really not exactly directly related to what we're doing, but they have to get it off their chest, I let them do it. But that's the limit. But I'll let them talk as long as they want. If they want to talk about how they applied their program last week or how things came up and what they did. From my perspective, that's absolutely the most important thing is putting it into action, just doing it, you know. And usually there's readings, and I have them read the various readings and have them take notes and bring them back and we discuss. So I thought this was a little bit, I mean, everybody has talked, said some really cool things, and I appreciate everything that I heard. Some were really, really good. And I'm focusing maybe a little bit different than others, a little bit more on technique. And what I find is super helpful for me is to ask a lot of questions. And so I'm going to go through these a step at a time here. Step one, we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. The focus of this step for me is about being honest with yourself, and that's one, and about how it's affected you. I know when my very first time I worked the steps, I knew I was pretty powerless, and I wasn't sure that my life still was unmanageable. It took me a long time to actually get a sponsor. I think my self-will was, if there was a rating 1 to 10, 10 being the most self-willed that you could possibly be, I think I was up near 10 somehow. And so, of course, I was full of fear. My whole life was based around fear and all those other things. But I finally did find a sponsor. I couldn't find a sponsor because I couldn't find one good enough, if that makes sense. And I never could find one good enough. Finally, I started working the steps myself, and I got stuck on step five. found somebody who I thought, well, he'll be okay, and started working with him. And after we spent about 5 weeks together, I read him my inventory. He said, are you done now? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, okay, how you feeling? And I said, I'm not feeling too good. So we started over. And so primarily, I mean, I've done the steps maybe with about, I don't know, a couple dozen sponsees. And I used to let them, you know, pretty much decide to work from whatever book or whatever they liked. But now I mostly focus on working from how Al-Anon works. And I like that a lot. I think the readings are beautiful. We go a paragraph at a time. We read them, every paragraph, sort of like what Claudia was talking about, that having everybody go through and look at the definition of the words in each of the steps. It's kind of like that, and we're very focused on that. And I ask them always, how does this apply to you? I'm really trying to understand how they identify with it. And I know that helped me a lot when I was able to really be clear that I identified with what was being said. It really, really helped me to feel like I wasn't alone. Somebody else wrote about it, and it's exactly what I'm feeling. That was very cool. We discuss, so we'll read a paragraph, and then we discuss it. A lot of times I see people that that have difficulty understanding that they think they have control over all kinds of things in this step. And so they say, well, I don't know how, I don't know why I don't have control over these things. So what I typically will ask them to do is make the simple list. On the left side, you write down everything that you can control, and on the right side, you write down everything that you can't control. And they bring that list back, and we talk over it. Inevitably, the first time, there's a lot of things on the side they could control that they really can't. We talk about it. And when it's all done, what they have is under what they can control, there's only one thing they can really control, and that's themselves. And that's pretty eye-opening for a lot of them. It certainly helped me when I did that the first time. We also talk about it, everybody's so different. Often we'll talk about the three C's, if they're really pretty new, and that they didn't cause it, can't control it, and can't cure it. We talk about surrender a lot in this step. It comes up from the How Al-Anon Works readings. It comes up inevitably every time. And because I sponsor a lot of men, usually it means to them that if they surrender, they lost. They lost the game. And they feel like, well, I'm a loser. And so we have to go through that. We have to look at what that really means. We talk about things like, maybe surrender is just being able to see what reality is really like or what it really is. And, you know, we can talk about, again, I'm working with men. If you talk about military situations where you need to stop doing what you're doing because it's not working and you surrender, it's a strategic withdrawal or whatever, and a strategic reassessment, that seems to go better with them, and they sort of get over that. Usually, but everybody is so different. The thing that we also end up talking a lot about caring versus controlling, and there's something that's very strange for almost every one of them, and that is that we talk about are you allowing the alcoholic to have dignity for themselves? And it's like, that's 180 degrees from how they're thinking. You know, they're there trying to save the person, and they're not responding. They're not paying attention. They're not doing what they're being told to do. And so then the question comes up about how did we ever get into this situation where we think that we're going to be able to save them? And how did we ever come to this belief that somehow we're powerful enough to do that? And also, how did we become so disrespectful of them? These are really, usually these things are really eye-openers. It's fascinating to listen to them talk about their experiences in all those regards. And the other thing that comes up inevitably is because this is the very first step, and usually most of the people I work with are very, very new. It's how do they face up to the pain of having to watch their loved one self-destruct? And that's a deep conversation. What usually goes pretty well. How did we end up moving from focusing on ourselves to focusing on others? Then inevitably it comes down to how well is it working, you know, and what can you do to not feel so much pain? And that really gets their attention. And realizing how destructive it's been for them. I tell them a story a lot of times about when I was learning to be a lifeguard. They said, the teachers were saying, when someone is drowning, they're usually panicking. And they have adrenaline flowing inside of them, and they're super strong, and they're super, super stubborn. And they said the worst thing you can probably do or possibly do is to rush in and just grab them and try to save them, because the tendency will be for them to grab you so hard, you'll end up both drowning. So they say, stay away, watch them carefully, watch them until they start to become really tired. And that reminds me so much of the program. The people that are just, by the time they end up in an Al-Anon meeting, they're pretty much done. Let's see. Are you willing to let go of your illusion of power over alcohol or other people? It's another question I like to ask. They don't think they have, there's no illusion of power. They just have the power. And it's always an interesting discussion to have. So when they start to seem like they're understanding what the concepts are and what it's about, I ask them if they're ready to move on. It doesn't matter. My experience is it doesn't really matter if it's really gotten all the way down into their heart. Even if it's just mostly in their head, that's good enough usually. You have to be a little careful, but my experience is with every new step, the prior step somehow seems to move into their hearts. And I'm not sure how that works. It makes more sense to them. They're not thinking about it, and they're putting the pieces together. I'm not sure exactly how that works. But I have to be really careful and ask them, you know, when we're working on a particular step, I'll go back periodically and ask them, how do they feel about the prior step that they worked, just to make sure that everything's good. And if they feel in their hearts that it's true, then it's true for them. So everybody is different, takes different amounts of time for everybody on all these things. Step two, came to believe that the power greater in the self could restore us to sanity. This step is focused on hope for a better way, some kind of a solution. One of the things that I've discovered is some people, when they read the how Al-Anon works, you know, everything's written in the we and us and in that perspective. And I'll ask him sometimes what we'll read it, and I'll ask him, well, what did you think about that? And they'll start talking about somebody else that it applies to. And when that happens, I find it's really, really useful to have them go back in, reread the same sentence, but make it personal. In other words, for example, if the sentence is, my relationships are damaged and my life has become unmanageable, when they read it from the personal sense, it becomes, originally say it's, our relationships are damaged and our lives have become unmanageable. I ask them to switch it to, my relationships are damaged and my life has become unmanageable. Sorry about the confusion on that. But that helps them to, it asks them, it basically puts them right there, right in the middle of it. And they can't, it's harder for them to say, well, that applies to my wife, or that, you know. I find that to be really, really helpful. I know I had to do it. I talked about my self-will previously, and my sponsor had me do that. It was super, super helpful. Many people who come in that I work with really don't see how they're insane. They know the alcoholic's insane, or the person that brought them in, they're just totally insane. They really can't see how their thinking has become distorted. A lot of times I ask them to tell me and describe to me how they last tried to help the alcoholic. A specific example. What was the result? And I have them do that 3 or 4 or 5 different times over and over, and they can start to see that there's some sort of real pattern there. Sometimes they tell me that stuff up front. I don't have to ask for it. It just depends on what we're reading and the situation. Do they know that there's a real solution to fixing the alcoholic or the other person? And that's a good question. Sometimes if they're not really quite there, that gets their attention. But walking them through multiple examples of their own examples really, really is helpful. They cannot bring themselves to ask for help. Mostly I'm dealing with men, as I said, and most of these people are just, I would not ask for help. I'd rather die, and that's usually why they're there. They're almost dead. I do remind them that it's very safe to be an Al-Anon because already they know they're talking to people that understand. I like to ask them, how do you feel after attending an Al-Anon meeting? And when almost inevitably they're saying, well, I always feel a little bit better, I'll ask them, well, do you know why you feel better? And they don't. They just don't know why. And I said, well, there's some answers in working the steps. You'll understand a lot of this. I ask them, what does a power greater than ourselves mean? Their answer is, will always provide me a clue on how they're gonna interpret the third step when we get to it. I think the main thing in step two is for them to stop thinking they have all the solutions and all the answers, and to start thinking about getting help from some other place than themselves, something other than themselves. And so let's go to step, any example they can give you about something that caused them to feel better about their situation with the alcoholic, that would be an example of step two in action. And it does suggest that step two is true in their lives. So if you can get them into those types of conversations, it's super helpful. Let me see how I'm doing on time. Oops, I went too long. Step three is really cool. It's one of my best ones. I'm going to have to cut it short, but it's one of my favorite steps. It was so difficult for me because I spent a lot of time trying to develop a God as I understood him. Good luck with that. If you can understand God, let me know, because my experience is that never happened and I never will. My experience was it wasn't until after I worked the steps that I realized I didn't really need to. I just needed to pray and know that something was there, and when I prayed to it or whatever, I would get guidance and I would get power to do what I needed to do, and it no longer became important to me what it was. So my takeaway on that is basically anything that this, we're just like opening a door. Step three is they're just making a decision to turn themselves to that there's another answer, to give themselves over to something that can take care of them. A lot of people, when I ask them to read the step, they read it, and I say, well, what does that mean to you? And for me, and for the men that I sponsor, probably 75-80% of them think, the step is to make a decision to turn your life over to God. And right away they say, no way, that's going to happen. And I don't know what it is about their brains. My brain, that's how it worked with my brain at first too. They don't see the word care anywhere in it. So it's nice to get them focused on what that is. And Claudia was talking about, most of the people I work with have had pretty healthy childhoods. So I'll sometimes say, well, it kind of sounds like that's how my mom used to treat me. So it helps them to, I think it's important to find out or think about who cared for them. And if they can, then they can see how that's so valuable and how they can share that. The other thing is they're just making a decision. They don't have to give themselves, they don't actually have to do it. I explained that will come when they work the rest of the steps. Some people hate God. The good news about that is they actually believe. And in those cases, I've found it's really helpful to have them I say, well, why don't you fire your God and make a one ad for a new God? And I say, bring it back and let's go over it. They bring it back, we read it, and, you know, they're always usually saying things like, well, I want a God that loves me and takes care of blah, blah, and all this stuff. And when we're all done, I just suggest that maybe that's their new God. Usually it works. I've never thought that would be true, but it usually works for them. They go, yeah, that's good. I like that. They pretty much wrote their own script for what their God was to be. Sometimes I've dealt with 200% atheists, and almost all of them or both of them have generally came to the consensus that the power greater than them was the group or the people in the groups, and that's good enough. As I said, the main thing is just to have the door open, that's all, so that they, just so that they're willing to make the decision. Any God is enough. I don't know, I could go on some more, but I think that's pretty much it for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Rick.
Hi, my name is Beth, and I am a very grateful member of this program. And today I'm celebrating my Al-Anon anniversary and could not think of a better way to do so than participation in this. I am at a point in my program where I am finding that I'm getting a fair number of sponsees, but this is the first time in sponsorship that I have been able to start doing anything more than steps 1, 2, and 3 with the sponsee. I've actually got 2 that are going through step 4 and 5 right now. So I figured that steps 1, 2, and 3 would be the best for me to share on, since I've got lots of experience there. Step 1, admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives could become unmanageable. It seems to me that I attract sponsees that are coming in angry. And that's probably because I came in angry. And I think we attract people who can identify with us. It was so crucial to me that I get to where I could move the idea of alcoholism as a disease from here to my heart. And I find that that's really critical with just about every woman I sponsor, that transition of that. They can't really, I find people, and I know I had a real hard time admitting my powerlessness until I could fully comprehend that alcoholic I'm powerless over is sick. And so I find I do a lot of work with my sponsees at the beginning with really getting that knowledge to move from head to heart. We've got a lot of wonderful literature. I use How It Works. I use Pastor Recovery. I really use quite early that wonderful brochure that we've got on merry-go-round called Denial. That one really seems to get it across really good. And I do quite often go back to the original instructions for just the first step, because it's so important that they get the disease concept. Once that disease information gets into the heart, and in the discussions, I'm seeing a lot more knowledge that the person that they're working with is, or concerned about and obsessed with, is sick. then I find it's easier to go on to discussions. And sometimes it involves reading and sharing one paragraph at a time from a lot of our literature about the powerlessness over people, places, and things, just about everything in our lives, everything but our own, hopefully, responses rather than reactions. That, to me, is a major goal. And the unmanageability of what life has become. Different people seem to vary between whether their major issue is the powerlessness or the major issue that brought them in is the unmanageability. And depending on which one the sponsee is struggling with more, will quite often guide where the conversations go and which one we're really focusing on first. Once that, once we've gone through all the questions at the end of the PAS book, then the next thing I do is ask, how do you feel? Are you ready to move on to step two? Do you really feel you are truly at a point where you have completed for now step one? This is something you're going to have to do on a daily basis, you know, but are you at a point where you're comfortable moving on to step two? Yeah. Came to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. One of the first things I do, especially with sponsees that are having God issues, is I tell them to stand naked in front of a full-length mirror and honestly look at themselves and do they really think that they are the most powerful thing in the universe? And I have yet to meet anybody who, upon doing that exercise, really thinks they're the greatest thing. Yeah, so that really gets that visualization of looking in the mirror really gets across that there has to be something in the universe greater than they are. And from that realization, it seems to be a whole lot easier to move on to, okay, do you admit that your thinking in a lot of areas hasn't been quite normal? And I do a lot of discussion with sponsees that how Al-Anon using the term insane or restore me to sanity does not mean insane like you need to be locked up in a straitjacket. It just means your thinking isn't whole. You've given away part of your whole pie. And when that seems to meld, that how we use insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, you know, expectations that aren't realistic, then people seem to comprehend, or at least the girls, ladies I've worked with, seem to comprehend that there is hope that they can get pieces of themselves back through starting to turn to something that's greater than they are, whether it be the group, a sociologically acceptable version of God, a religious entity, or whatever their personal concept is. And I usually go into depth with what do you feel is your personal concept? How are you visualizing? How are you thinking? Do you realize if at any point in time in your recovery journey you discover your higher power is not big enough for you, you can fire him and get a new one. It's okay to be mad at God. God understands. You know, things like that. You know, all lessons that it took me years to get. You know, it's real important that the people I work with, some of them come in with a decent face, but a lot of them come in with the same thing I do. If the God that's a terrorist is going to get him if he finds them. And so to start shifting that to a concept of a loving higher power that cares about you, that's a real journey for a lot of the women I work for, just like it was for me. And it's, you know, again, that thing about restoring to sanity. And I always share with my sponsees that I struggle with that phrase because I don't think my higher power restored me to sanity, because I don't think in my upbringing I ever was sane. I think God has granted me sanity for the first time in my life. And that's a big piece of my sharing, that I came in a family that I was off the wall from the get-go. I have no memories of being whole in my thinking or how I reacted with the world. So for me, it's a gift that I've got any sanity at all. And so, you know, I make sure that my sponsees know that there is the possibility, even if you come to the realization that you never were really sane, that you can get this gift. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as we understood him, and that we is personal with each person, and that all you're doing in making a decision, in my opinion, is you're making the decision that you're going to do it. You're making a commitment that you are going to follow through by doing the rest of the steps, because making the decision that you're going to do it doesn't get it done. What gets it done is working the rest of the steps. And so, you know, again, you know, it's always go through all the readings, you know, go through the questions at the end of Path to Recovery, you know, lots of discussion, lots of how do you feel? Have you tried doing this? You know, a slight change in attitude. Okay, you did that. You did this. You used a new tool. What was the response to you? Do you feel that things are improving and getting better? You know, a lot of touchstones like that. You know, and a lot of sharing back and forth, and listening to where are they coming from, and, you know, hopefully getting across, that participation is really important. You only get it by practicing it. You only get it by giving it away. And I am a firm believer that if you can only make one meeting a week, fine, but then be making lots of phone calls. But I think, my personal opinion is I didn't grow very far very fast on one meeting a week. I needed more than that. And, you know, in today's world, that's going to be difficult for a lot of us, and I love Zoom. You know, this is really wonderful that we can do this now. I do a lot of work long distance on the phone. One of my sponsees has, I was meeting with her face to face while she was here, but she's now on her way back home to Canada. And while she's in Canada, we've been working over the phone, and that's working great. I'm in Yuma. I've got another sponsee there in Mesa. The sponsee here in Yuma that I have been meeting with at the library, library's closed now, so we're working on the phone. And I'm not sure about the other one, whether she's going to keep coming over or whether we're going to start working on the phone. But, you know, that's not something that's scary for me. It's something that I have found works very well. And with that, I'm almost at 15 minutes, so I will pass to the next person.
Thank you so much, Beth. Really appreciate your share. Next up, we have our fabulous speaker, Melody. Melody, right ahead.
Hi, I'm Melody. Thank you, Laura. So thank you for this opportunity to speak on steps 1, 2, and 3. Claudia asked me earlier if I was nervous, and strangely enough, I am. but that's okay. It's only 15 minutes, right, and then it'll be over with. So, you know, when I look back on the person I was when I first came in, I envision a young woman that was deep into a pit of quicksand. And the more I struggled, the deeper I got. And I didn't know it at the time, but when I went to that first meeting, I was reaching my hand out to a power greater than myself. And when I asked somebody to sponsor me, I was again reaching my hand out to that power. And those steps gave me some firm foundation to, especially steps 1, 2, and 3. Working those steps was building a foundation, and that foundation was a reliance on a power greater than myself. And from that point on, I could build the life that I had always wanted but never seemed to get there. So I working steps 1, 2, and 3 for me involves reading conference-approved literature, doing some writing about how the step applies to my life, and then sharing that with my sponsor. My favorite book is Paths to Recovery, because the main text on each step, I think, is pretty comprehensive. The stories provide me with different perspectives on the step, and then the questions provide a basis for doing some writing. And I do strongly believe that writing should be done with pen and paper, not on a computer. They're just something for me, something that happens when my thoughts go from my brain to my hand and they come out. I have huge awarenesses when I do that. And so I strongly suggest to my sponsors that they do the same. As far as the literature that they use, I'm open to that. I suggest Past Recovery. If they'd rather use another piece of literature, that's fine too. So step one, I understood when I got here that I was powerless. I was so beat down by the family disease of alcoholism. I just knew that. But I had no idea that my behavior was controlling or manipulative. I thought, you know, that's just what you do. There's a problem, you fix it. I didn't understand that going along to get along, people pleasing, was a form of control and manipulation. I did that to get the alcoholic, to keep them from being angry. I had no idea how my life was unmanageable. Everything looked good on the outside. I was responsible. I went to work. My bills were paid. My house was clean. My child was clothed and fed. I thought everything was perfectly managed. I had no idea that the fact that I was going on violent, rageful rampages through my house was a sign that maybe things were unmanageable, or that I was spending nights on the floor crying to a God I didn't even believe in, that maybe that was a sign that my life was unmanageable. So when working step one, I had to, what really helped me was listening to other people. My sponsor shared with me, I listened to people in the meetings, talked about those specific things, the specific actions that they were taking to try and control what they were powerless over, and how and specifically what in their life was unmanageable. And so I recommend that to my sponsees when they're having trouble identifying those things. Talk to other people, bring the subject up in the meetings, read the literature, I share my own experience. And I'm looking for them to be able to start to identify those things. Step one is awareness. I cannot change anything I'm not aware of. And it doesn't mean they have to identify everything, but just get a start on it. I don't, you know, for me, working the steps is a lifelong process. And I really like the analogy of the onion and the peeling of the onion. I think those layers come off when they're supposed to. And I don't feel that as a sponsor, it's my job to take off anybody's blanket of denial. Then that can actually be harmful. And so I might, you know, if they're struggling, suggest, well, this is what I'm seeing or this is what I'm hearing when you talk about this. Do you think that is what might be happening? And if the answer is no, I let it go. But sometimes it's like, yes, that's exactly it. They can identify. So, you know, so the goal is just to start identifying those behaviors of control, manipulation, and unmanageability in step one. The very first time I read step two, I saw that I zeroed in on the restored to sanity part, and I thought, well, that's kind of weird because that implies that I'm insane, and I am not the insane one. I am the one who's got it all together, and you just follow my plan, and everything's going to be fine. But by the time I finished working step one, I had come to believe that, yes, I was insane, and I needed to be restored to sanity. Every morning when I got up and went into my kitchen, the first thing I saw was the fist-sized hole I put in my kitchen cupboard. And that was, you know, that's kind of a sign of insanity. And, you know, it took working the steps to figure that out. So as I began to work, do the reading and do the writing, I began noticing instances where I would just respond differently to, I feel much better now that I'm moving my hands. Hope that's not too distracting, but, you know, I would just react differently. Something kind and loving would come out of my mouth instead of critical and hateful, and it would catch me by surprise, and I'd think, where the heck did that come from? And then I'd think, oh, yeah, you know, there's a power greater than myself out there, and he's helping me out, and I would share those things with my sponsor, and she encouraged me to keep a miracle book to write those things down in. And again, writing with pen and paper. To be honest, I'm more in favor of doing a gratitude list. I express those things, and I continue to do that on a daily basis because it helps remind me on a daily basis that God is working in my life and can restore me to sanity whenever things get out of balance. And I strongly recommend gratitude lists to my sponsees. It's helped me to change my perspective from the glass is always half empty to the glass is half full. So again, in step two, in working with a sponsee, just kind of looking for when I can say, yes, I need to be restored to sanity, that's acceptance. Step one, awareness. Step two, acceptance of my behavior and that I need help. So, you know, I'm just kind of looking for that ability to accept that and begin to identify specific instances in which there is a power helping them out. In step three, the important part of step three for me is the God of our understanding part. I was pretty closed-minded when I came to the program of anything that had to do with God, higher power, spirituality, prayer. I didn't want to hear it. I chose not to hear it for about 3 months because I didn't want to leave. There was something about those meetings that was really attractive to me, but I felt like if I let that information in, I was going to have to leave. And I'm so very, very grateful that nobody told me, you know, what I needed to believe or who I needed to believe in, and that I was given the space and the time to come to my own understanding. And again, that's a lifelong process. I just, at the last sponsorship workshop, I had an awareness about my higher power that brought me to an even deeper understanding of him. And so my relationship is constantly evolving, and I allow my sponsors the space and the time to do the same, to come to their own understanding. And again, there doesn't need to be a complete picture, you know, right off the bat, just the beginning of that understanding. I feel the same way about prayer. I was very closed off to prayer for a long time. I'd never done prayer. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't want to do it. And there's a lot of good suggestions in our literature about praying and what that means, and meditation. And that mostly comes from it's the suggestions of our members, what has worked for them. In our literature, this is how you pray, no rules. To do that, there's also, other than the Serenity Prayer, you won't find any specific prayers in our literature. I prefer myself to pray in my own words and not recite something that has been written. However, there were a few people in the very beginning who told me that I should be praying on my knees. And that is a position, because of my past history, that I associate with dominance and humiliation. I didn't want to do it, and I don't do it. But I went through a period of time of feeling guilty about that, because I was told I should do that, I didn't understand exactly why I didn't want to do it. I just knew that, but it took me a while to figure that out. So I don't have any rules for my sponsees about prayer and meditation. I allow them to decide for themselves how they want to do that. So step three is the action part. One, awareness. Two, acceptance. Three, action. And of course, the action is not turning my will in my life over. I do that in the rest of the steps. It's making that decision that I'm going to turn my will in my life over. And I do that, I make that decision in a number of ways. Every time I call my sponsor, that is a decision. And it's a decision to turn my will in my life over. Every time I go to the meeting, every time I pick up a piece of literature, every time I'm of service, those are all decisions. Every time I take a contrary action to what I would have done in the past, I'm turning my life and my will over in that decision. And that, to me, you know, being able to understand that takes the mystery out of it. I get a lot of questions from my sponsees. How do I know I'm turning my will over? How do I know what God's will is? How do I know that I'm following it? Well, you know, all I need to do is use those tools. God has given me those tools to help me. And I don't need to know. I believe I don't need to know what God's will is. I don't even need to know if I'm following it. I just need to take the next right action. And if I'm in doubt, then I pick up a tool. And that might lead me to some clarity of what it is I need to do, or just simply take an action contrary to what I've done in the past. And so helping the sponsee to understand that, I think just really, you know, takes all that question and that mystery out of it. So where do I want to go from there? I believe I have one more thing to say, and now I've gone blank. But so that's how I work the first three steps, and that's how I suggest my sponsees, how I help them work. I know what I wanted to say is, oftentimes I'll get calls from sponsees that are upset because their self-will, you know, one more time has gotten in the way. And I encourage them to literally pat themselves on the back for calling me, because that's picking up a tool and doing something different. I encourage them to pat themselves on the back every time they do anything but to use a tool. My sponsor used to, in the very beginning, I'd be, doing the same thing, whining to her because I made a mistake or whatever. And she would say, well, so you were human today. And she just kept saying that to me until I believed it for myself, that I was human today. It's okay. I can clean up whatever mistake I've made. And you know, once I came to believe that, then I stopped, you know, getting down on the dumps and complaining to her. She didn't need to tell me that I was human anymore. I understood it for myself. So I always try to be encouraging, never condemning, with my sponsees. And that, I believe, is all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Melody. That was wonderful. Our next speaker is Kim. You have 15 minutes. Take it away. Got to unmute first.
Boom. Good morning. I'm so glad to be with you all this morning. I, too, have an anniversary, Beth, so happy anniversary to us. And I, too, am grateful to be here to share. I had signed up in my home meeting to chair a meeting this month to celebrate, and, of course, that got canceled. So I have this opportunity that I signed up for many, many months ago. Who would have known? So I'm grateful. I want to share a little bit about walking into my first meeting. It was in a private Alano club, and we had big banners of the 12 steps and 12 traditions. And we would read the steps and traditions, and people would talk about working the steps. And my thought was, are you kidding me? I have been working to save my own bacon, you know, to keep my life together, to keep my marriage together, and you're talking about having to work on something? You know, I walked in wanting a quick fix. But there was also something in the meeting that kept drawing me back. You know, I sat and compared the differences. I'm not like that. I don't do that. I'm not that old. I don't have all those kids. You know, I was looking for differences instead of the commonalities. But I stuck around because of the love. There was something in those meetings that drew me for 1 hour into a place where I was safe. I didn't have to have any answers. I could just listen. And that's one of the best gifts that Alan has given me, to become a better listener. As far as, step one, I definitely knew that my life was unmanageable because I was, you know, I ended up in Al-Anon, but the powerless part was really hard for me. I didn't understand that it was a disease. And I don't know, I was in the program quite a while before I actually found a sponsor. And we formed a relationship first before we started working the steps. And one of the things that we did together was we went to speaker meetings. We went to open AA meetings. And for some reason, to listen to someone tell their story, those were the kinds of things that I was starting to kind of grab onto. It was working for people. Could it work for me? Was there a possibility that maybe my life could get better if I was willing to just look at my part instead of always, you know, looking at what the other person was doing? I had a very loving sponsor. She kept me on track. I'd call and want to sing the hymns, you know, he, him, him. And she'd gently guide me back to my part. You know, what is your part? What could you do differently? You know, because I didn't want to look at me. I wanted to look at that other person, and I wanted them fixed. And I thought by me going to Al-Anon would fix the person. And, you know, that was just, you know, that where I was at, you know, in my own illness. I was encouraged to read lots of literature, and especially about the disease part, because once I could get, like Beth shared, the head to the heart, that this person I loved didn't wake up every morning and decide to make my life miserable. I mean, that was like, because I really thought when I walked into Al-Anon, that's what was happening. That person chose to do this to me. It was intentional. It was mean, and, you know, so here I am now getting new information that this disease has control over someone I love, that he doesn't choose to get up every morning and act or do or behave the way he does, and that I am now being introduced to a program that's going to help me act and do and behave differently. What a gift. Some of the slogans were just for today, you know, just for when I'd start complaining, you know, and she'd say, just for today, let's just get through today. And the one day at a time, just one day at a time is all you have to do to get through this. And also, you know, I was anxious but scared. I wanted to move forward, but I was also terrified of moving forward. And she would just say, let's just do it together, you know, so in a really loving way. And I just am so grateful for sponsorship. On step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. There was a power within the meeting that I felt. I wasn't yet ready to kind of, I was avoiding that whole God thing too, of getting to step three whenever any of the steps were talked about and they were, had a God in them. I was, you know, it's like, oh, do I have to figure this God thing out right now? I just want to get better and I want him to quit drinking and we can talk about God later. Just listening in meetings and getting that support, that I could pick up the phone and share my crazies. You know, that's the kind of, when I form a relation with someone and know that I can pick up the phone and share my crazies. I'm nuts. You know, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, never once did she go, oh, you know, oh my God, you did that. You know, we've all done these things. I am not anyone more special than the next person. So, and somebody, you know, said about picking up that heavy phone. And I remember going through those periods that phone weighed, you know, 1,000 pounds. And it was so hard to admit when I behaved badly. But what was happening is I was starting to be transformed through sponsorship, through literature, through writing. We used the 12 by 12. And a lot of daily readers back then, that's kind of what we had, you know, and now that we have such wonderful work, the workbooks that are fabulous and, Past Recovery, how Al-Anon works, reading the stories of other people that have gone through, you know, I'm not the first. And when I look and listen to the stories, especially of one of our founders, Lois, and that the people that paved the way for me to start to heal from a disease that I didn't cause and that I didn't cure and that I can't control, what a gift that is. Step three, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood it. There again, I'm ready. I have to start looking at how can I become to understand what my higher power might look like? And you know, a loving sponsor, and we just talked and talked and talked a lot about that. You know, was it the meet you can make at your meeting? You can borrow mine. You know, I remember saying, you know, you can borrow mine. My God's working for me. I think he could work for you too. And you know, if you want to pray to Mary's God, pray to Mary's God. And so that was just, you know, those little baby steps of starting to do things differently and just opening a door that just possibly I would find a way to my own higher power. Another thing about sponsorship, I remember I'd gone to a meeting and said something, and after the meeting, a woman walked up to me, and I thought she was coming after me. Now I know she wasn't, but she had said, you know, I used a word that was a word we didn't use in Al-Anon. Well, I was mad, and I walked out of that meeting, and I went home and called my sponsor. Well, thank goodness I had a sponsor to call, because I had such thin skin back then, you know, that might have been my exit out. Oh, they're mean. You know, well, that wasn't the case at all because I called my sponsor and she talked that through with me and she was absolutely right. And what that woman was trying to do was to help me, but I had a connection with someone who could help me through those things about the program that I don't understand and I don't get. And, she was patient and, she would say things like, you know, when I'd say, I can't do that. She would just say, just try, you know, just try to turn your will over. Just try it. Just see how your day goes. If you just get up this morning and turn your will over and see how your day goes. That relationship ended and, it was not how I would have liked it to end. And this is kind of a side note, but you know, she had worked a good program. I had a good program, but we couldn't resolve this thing that happened between us. And that was very hard. It was very difficult but it was also very, you know, became aware of sometimes things just happen like that, whether we have a recovery program or not, whether or not how hard we're working our program. But what that did was get me out there looking for a new sponsor. And what was funny is, I actually asked someone who was at my very first Al-Anon meeting, so she knew me, you know, she knew me from day one, and some of the things that I do with her is we set up a time every Monday. I call her. She is in the Midwest, so there's a two-hour delay now. I call her at 6 o'clock my time, and it's 8 a.m. her time. We talk for 30 minutes. We keep on track. We don't have to tell a catch-up story to the punchline, you know, because we pick up, we keep current, we know what's going on. I can also call her anytime during the week, any, you know, anything going on. But I like that structure. I had no structure in my life. I was just kind of existing in this program or before the program. And so for her to set some kind of a time up for just me felt really special. So I try to do that with other people that I sponsored. I went through a period of time where I sponsored quite a few people before I came, I moved to Arizona. And some of them left and found other sponsors. And I really saw where my ego got involved in sponsorship. So it was, it hurt, it was painful, but boy, what an awakening that I had started to get my ego involved in someone else's recovery, which I had no business doing. Today, I like to let people I sponsor take, you know, set their own pace. I have one who's in a real hurry, just let's get this done. And I remember that feeling too of let's hurry and get through this. I don't want to feel the pain too long. I don't want to sit in these steps too long. I might get uncomfortable. So, you know, I mentioned about slowing down. I'll do it once and I won't do it again because this is her, it gets to be her journey. Just like my sponsor lets my journey be my journey. The shared experience and the laughter, have so much healing power for me. I'm just going to look here what I got. The sponsorship bookmark is one thing that I always hand out to people that I sponsor, just so we know we have what our kind of guidelines are for our relationship. Some of my relationships with people I sponsor have turned into very deep, heartfelt relationships that I just cherish. And whether I was their sponsor or not, they would be somebody I would want to hang out with. I encourage people to go as many meetings as they can and read literature. There's a lot of chatter that we can get distracted if we don't stick with the program and stick with the literature that we have. I'm grateful that my sponsor and I usually talk about the reading of the day out of our daily readers on the Monday mornings that we talk. We'll always, you know, talk on that unless there's some other big thing going on. But just stay connected. I am just grateful for this opportunity. I don't know if I've gone long enough, but I think I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you to our speakers for sharing. We will now close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.